You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2018 Tour de France in association with Rafa. From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee shops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport. Today we are in Espelette.
Where are we, Lionel?
We're in Espelette. Near, the Tour de France time trial is finishing next to a roundabout at the top of a hill in Espelette.
What's that say about the local mayor?
Well, I won't go into that, you know, but yeah.
We've covered that. That was Francois.
But it's probably the only, let's say it's the only roundabout in Espelette, because we don't know, it's the only roundabout we know about anyway, so.
It's a French cultural thing, Richard.
That was Lionel Burney, that was Francois Thomaso before him, and I'm Richard Moore, and we're speaking as the final stage time trial is underway. Geraint Thomas in the yellow jersey is about 20 minutes into his ride. We've just watched him wobble on a corner. His front wheel went and he got it back, but that was a pretty scary moment for him, I would imagine.
A scary moment, but followed immediately by the first intermediate time, and he was leading, you know, really comprehensively with a 14 second lead over Chris Froome and I think 16 seconds over Tom Dumoulin. I mean, everything we said about Geraint Thomas, I mean, having the tour of his life, leading with the yellow jersey on his back, leading Chris Froome and Tom Dumoulin, probably two of the best time trial specialists of the decades, is absolutely tremendous.
Worst case scenario was that it was rainy, and it has been a little bit rainy this morning. The roads were wet, but now, as the GC riders are on the course, sun's out, roads are drying out, so the threat of difficult road surface conditions has eased considerably. And as it stands at the moment, Sky are going to have two riders on the podium, aren't they? Geraint Thomas is going to win the Tour and Chris Froome is going to finish third, because he currently is going better than Primoz Roglic out on the road. Tom Dumoulin, so-so at the moment.
A little bit of a surprise, that. I think Roglic, we've tended to think that he's been finishing the Tour very well, and he is a great time trialist. They're all good time trialists. So that's a little bit of a surprise. Sage isn't over yet. Bit of a scare for Tom Dumoulin this morning as well, when he woke up and discovered that he'd misplaced his skin suit. Francois, do you want to use your favourite word on that one? Are you calling something on that?
Bullshit, I suppose.
I mean, I don't want to sound too cynical, but this sounds like an advert for a clothing manufacturer. Oh no, Tom Dumoulin's lost his world champion skin suit. Quickly, let's make another one and get it to him. And here's all some photos and some video of it happening. Well done, Eche Ondo. Yeah,
who are a Basque company. So it's all turned out very well, hasn't it?
Yeah, it added a little bit of spice to the race in a city that's famous for its chili.
I had a couple of the chilies with the buffet at lunchtime. Nice, pickled and quite hot, the Espelette chili.
It's very good, yeah. The Espelette chili is very, very popular in France. It's not that hot, actually, but it's kind of sweet. It had a very peculiar flavor. It was imported from Mexico in the 19th century, I think, and it's really very famous in most French restaurants these days. If you want to be trendy, you have to add piment d'Espelette.
Before we go our separate ways, at the moment, Team Sky have the quickest rider. Michał Kwiatkowski is the leader in the clubhouse. Is his time going to be beaten, do you think?
Well, he went very close to winning the final time trial last year at the Tour de France. He was second on that stage to his countryman, Matej Bodnar, who rides for Bora Hansgrohe. So, you know, he's proven himself to be very good in this discipline and at this stage of the race. Let's see.
Well, for me, if it goes the way it's been going for the start of the Tour and up to now, I wouldn't be surprised. And you kind of forecast that yesterday, Richard. For once, you were in the true. You know, I see Geraint Thomas winning the, you know, two Alpine stages plus the final time trial. What can you say?
Very dangerous saying that, Francois. Yeah, we're going to find out whether that comes true later in this podcast.
Oh no, Richard, it's clouding over, it might rain, and I've left my Rafa jacket in the car.
A community around the world, stories and films with the most compelling characters, the world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Hi, I'm Amy from Rafa. At Rafa, we believe that cycling transforms lives and that cycling is the answer to many of our daily problems and challenges. We have 23 Rafa clubhouses around the world with 300 rides a week with thousands of people. So, wherever you are, we invite you to ride with us. See rafa.cc to find a ride near you.
For anyone pointing out the hypocrisy of us slagging off Tom Dumoulin for his stunt with his clothing company and then having our own little clothing ad in there. Well, we're fully aware of that. It was conscious.
It was just a joke. And it was meant with affection.
Thank you.
And all my jokes are.
Thank you very much to our headline sponsor, Rafa, without whom, etc., we wouldn't be here. But we're very, very grateful to them for their fantastic support.
Rich, while Francois's not here, I just want to point out, he was wrong about something. He said, oh, Thomas would won two mountain stages and he'll win the time trial. Well, why not, as he does. But he didn't. Geraint Thomas didn't win the stage. Tom Dumoulin did by a very narrow margin. Knocked Chris Froome off the top step at the last minute, really, and the last second, or the last 1.78 seconds. But yeah, Geraint Thomas has won the Tour. Tom Dumoulin has won the stage. When Geraint Thomas was clearly outside Dumoulin's stage-winning time, I was expecting Froome to maybe say, congratulations, Tom. They were both in the finish area in the sort of hot seat, but there wasn't an awful lot of acknowledgement between the two, Dumoulin and Froome. Not making anything more of that, but interesting to observe.
I think there was a bit later when Geraint Thomas finished, but I have to say, a brilliantly judged ride by Tom Dumoulin. Must be the new skin suit, I don't know, but he was down at all the kind of intermediate checks, but it was tough that final half of the second half of the course, and he judged that just right. What a fantastic ride from him.
Yeah, well, world time trial champion, isn't he? And you know, he's good at backing up at the end of grand tours. I mean, well, we've said it all week, haven't we, what a different race it would have been had Chris Froome not crashed on the first day and had Tom Dumoulin not come to grief on the Mou de Bretagne stage. We might well have had a real humdinger of a three-way fight between the three of them at the end here. But as it was, probably the disappointment of the day was Primoz Roglic. It looked so good yesterday, but maybe yesterday's effort, hauling himself onto the podium positions last night, he paid for that a bit today. Whereas, we know Froome can produce that kind of performance, but it was comprehensive in the end between Froome and Roglic.
Yeah, I suspect Roglic absolutely. Well, he did bury himself. Yes, and that took its toll. He didn't look fluid at all, you know, really labouring up some of the climbs. And you can never know how. There's Julian Alaphilippe riding past us. I was speaking to his press officer, Mark, earlier. He was just talking about Alaphilippe and saying how he is exactly the same, whoever he's speaking to, even, he said, the President of France. I said, well, he met the President of France. Yeah, I think the jersey holders all met President Macron the other day. But Macron was at the race. And in fact, our chef at Leviscos, where we've stayed the last couple of nights, cooked for him when he was here at the Tour de France, which was quite remarkable. But he didn't actually make a public appearance at the race because there's a scandal at the moment involving him, and he didn't want to be seen at the Tour, apparently.
Interesting. Maybe, I mean, in the past, appearing at the Tour is, you know, might be a damage to a president's reputation. But no, that was interesting. But you say Alaphilippe there, he's riding up to the podium, of course, to collect another polka dot jersey. What else noteworthy there from the finish?
Well, one of the things that was announced today was that Dan Martin was named as the most combative rider of the Tour de France. And Francois, who's just joined us, spoke to Dan Martin after he crossed the line. So let's hear from Dan Martin now.
But the Tour's always a roller coaster. You always have good days and bad days. And this year might have been pretty bad, but then also really incredibly good as well. So yeah, it's memorable at least.
You think you've got the most combative award? I think
yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
He knew just now.
Oh, wow. Jeez. Yeah, I mean, that's...
Well done, Dan.
I don't really race just to make the race entertaining. I always try to calculate when to attack and try to make it count. You know, I'm racing to win, but that's incredible. You know, I mean, my aim was to be on the podium in Paris this year, but I didn't really say that too much that in the elite media. And obviously with the crashes and the misfortune, it didn't happen. But obviously to get that, it's like, that's huge. That means really a lot. Yesterday, for the first time as well, I really realised how much the crash affected me on Alpe d'Huez. Like, I just couldn't push that day. And yesterday I was really tired and I was hurting, but I could still just grip my teeth and get through it. And Alpe d'Huez, I just didn't have any power left, you know, and I didn't realise at the time, but it was obviously the crash that was caused that. So I'm never one to look back. I think I just need to take it as a positive for the years to come. You know, it's I haven't got many years left, but it's kind of like, it shows what's possible for in the future. And obviously, that's part of the race as well. Like, being in the right place at the right time, and that's what Geraint's done a great job of this year. Incredibly memorable for one, but it means a lot. I mean, to win the first stage victory, the first stage victory of the tour for UAE as well. And I know, like, the mission of the team from the very beginning, and that's part of the reason why I came to this team was this kind of legacy, you know, to bring cycling to the people of UAE and kind of like and make it a big sport there and to get kids on bikes. And that's always been a passion of mine, and that's apparently everybody's been glued to the TV in the UAE watching me, so that means a lot as well. And then obviously to win the Super Combative, I mean, it's, yeah, I'm not sure anybody's ever won that without winning it on a single day, but you know, I've just tried my best every day, you know. And as I say, I'm not sure, I didn't really let on how much that crash affected me, but maybe we'll release in a few days the images of the after effects of that crash. But well, not really piece back. I've still got it looks like I've been shot, you know. I've got a bullet, I've got a hole in my back still that's like, it's probably going to take another 2 weeks to heal, you know. So it's, yeah, it looked far from ideal, but yeah, it's been, what a memorable tour. And I think for everybody, you know, it's probably one of the most open tours for a long time. I mean, even now the fight for the podium is going on, and it's I want to get to the television and see what's happening, you know. So, but I think you see when we stopped to have get rid of the pepper spray the other day, yeah. You see like me, Tom, Rogler, and Geraint just standing there having a chat. You know, it shows the mutual respect that we all have for each other. But at the same time, yesterday, I mean, we were all just completely empty, but trying to attack the hell out of each other, and it made for great racing, but it's also great to be a part of the race with these guys.
What's your take on Geraint winning the Tour, which was quite unexpected?
I'm happy for him. You know, it's great. Like, I've known him for a very long time.
That's why I'm asking.
We were juniors together, and we raced a lot as a together. Like, basically, we were sparring partners in juniors. We go way back, and we've always been in contact. And it's great to see him up there. You know, I think a lot of the person's happy for him because he's definitely one of the nice guys.
Well, we were played in there to this segment by some Basque atmosphere at the finish earlier on, and some Basque fans cheering for their local hero Mikel Landa, who has had a disappointing tour in the end, probably one that he'd not be happy with. Before that, we heard from Dan Martin, who you spoke to at the finish, Francois. He's somebody who perhaps doesn't finish as high up as Mikel Landa overall, but I think can reflect and seems to be reflecting on a good tour.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he said the effects of his crash really hampered his chances for the GC. But in the same time, as you heard, he just discovered he had won the Super Combative award, which is, and he sounded very moved about it. And there was a day of surprises, and good surprises on the finish line for many riders. Geraint Thomas was surprised to find his wife was waiting for him, so he was very emotional, you know, get together. But Dan Martin, you know, discovered he was awarded this prize, which is not a big distinctive jersey or whatever, but he was attacking every day, he was there every day. And as you heard it also, he paid homage to Geraint Thomas, you know, because he's known him forever. I mean, they were trained together, they had kind of a similar career. So in many ways, probably, yeah, it makes Dan Martin hope that, you know, following the same kind of path and pattern might lead him to higher things. There were other surprises, as we know, for Tom Dumoulin, who first thought he'd lost the stage, only to find out later that he would won it. And there was the final bad surprise for Chris Froome, you know, for whom everything went well, not so well in this Tour de France, when he might have thought he'd won the stage and finally find out that for 1 second he'd lost it.
Yeah, well deserved for Dan Martin, I think, and it means he'll stand on the podium in Paris.
Definitely.
And he seems to have a good outlook on life, Dan Martin. He's got twins on the way, and you know, he got married quite recently, and you know, seems to have found a good balance in his life. We should explain where we are, because we've moved on. We're in Biarritz now, and we're on a terrace outside a restaurant overlooking the sea.
This is a tradition I can really get on board with. Since Francois has joined the cycling podcast at the Tour de France, We've always had a tradition of finishing at a seafront restaurant.
Well, I'm a little bit like, you know, Ciro. I mean, I'm a sea guy. I mean, as much as I like the mountains, I'm like Ciro. If I can't see the sun, if I can't see the sea, if there's not a beach nearby, I'm not in my natural element, you know.
Well, along the coast, actually, just a little bit along the coast from a restaurant called Blue Cargo. And I tried to get us a table there. Quite a famous restaurant in Biarritz, not least because it's where David Miller was arrested in 2004 when he was eating with Dave Brailsford and his partner, which led to his eventual doping ban. It was he was arrested by the French drugs police, and the story is quite well known. And I thought, I don't know why I thought it would be a good place for us to have dinner tonight.
Finish the podcast off
little piece of cycling history there.
Yeah, well, you might have been accused of, you know, having a kind of a wicked approach to all that, you know, like going back to the scene of the crime. But yeah.
You've been accused of that anyway. Yeah, tonight, Richard.
But once again, we're not there. We are at Les Baigneuses, just, you know, overlooking the sea. Very nice. I'm sure David Miller lived in the area for a long time. Given the atmosphere here, lots of beautiful young people, live music and good beer. I don't know why I think David Miller probably knows the place.
Here, Lionel, there was a stage today. We're a bit later than usual, but can you give us the tale of the attack, please?
Well, yeah, I'll just wrap up what happened in the stage just as my my delicious podcasting beer arrives here on the terrace. It was stage 20 from Saint-Pé-sous-Nivelle to Espelette, a 31-kilometre time trial. Well, the first significant leader on the stage was Michael Hepburn of Mitchelton Scott. He set a time that stood for quite a lot of the stage. Jonathan Castroviejo of Team Sky got within 8 seconds of that, but it wasn't until Marc Soler, the Movistar rider, came in by 500th of a second to beat Hepburn's time, and that was a really interesting performance to me. Totally overshadowed by everything else that's gone on today, but Marc Soler is a future Grand Tour champion in the making. He's won Paris-Nice, he's pulled out a really fine time trial result on the penultimate stage of the tour. You know, we'll look back in future years, I think, and say, oh, do you remember the time when Soler, you know, briefly led the time trial? I mean, that was, you know, that's what you need, isn't it, to win a Grand Tour: climbing ability, time trialing ability. Stephen Kung went very close to that time, and that was what made me sit up and take notice, because you would think Stephen Kung would wipe the floor with Marc Soler, but, you know, these time trials at the end of a Grand Tour, particularly as it was so hilly, you know, that was the extra dimension. But then Søren Krogh Andersen of Team Sunweb, he was the first rider to go under 42 minutes. And then came Michał Kwiatkowski of Team Sky. But it was all very close. And then Chris Froome came in to knock his teammate out of the hot seat. And then Tom Dumoulin finally won it by a second from Chris Froome. There's been a lot of controversy from people who are watching on TV about the way the graphics seem to kind of switch and show Dumoulin winning or Froome winning, or the times not being quite correct. I've been doing a bit of asking around about this. I mean, the TV graphics and the official timing are two separate things. The TV graphics are kind of off the provisional, almost like the sort of hand-operated stopwatch. The actual stage timing by Tissot Timing is what determines the results. And so, you know, mistakes happen. I'm not sure. Well, it started a whole load of grassy knoll-style conspiracy theory here, but I really don't think that there's anything in that. Tom Dumoulin has won the stage fair and square. Chris Froome second, Geraint Thomas third, and as we heard in the press conference afterwards, you know, possibly he eased off. And Francois, you were trying to claim that your Nostradamus a bit earlier.
I was right.
You were right.
You said Geraint Thomas was going to win the time trial.
But he would
have
won it.
You're maintaining that you were right.
He should have won it.
But Nico Portal told him to slow down.
Exactly. Geraint Thomas said it himself. He was in the lead in the both intermediate timings. And then he had this little incident. He kind of slid out of contention. So from then on, Nicolas Portal and Geraint said it, you know, to the French TV. Then he told him, you know, just take it easy, relax. You need to win the tour. We don't care whether you win the stage. And he really ridden that time trial on his abilities and his of the moment. Of course, he would have won it.
Bullshit.
I had forecasted.
I'm calling bullshit here. Okay. Anyway,
we're still doing the tail of the attack, are we?
Dumoulin won the stage. Chris Froome second, so he climbs up to third place overall, bumping Primoz Roglic down. Roglic, a disappointment today. He falls off the podium at the last, having clawed his way up there with a stage win on Friday. The only other riders to get within a minute of Dumoulin were Kwiatkowski, Solenklaw Andersen and Bob Jungels. A little bit more movement in the top 10 overall because Bardet and Landa have swapped places. So Bardet up to 6th, Landa down to 7th. And Ilnur Zakarin up to 9th and Nairo Quintana down to 10th. So, I mean, that's a really impressive result for Zakarin particularly.
And one of the most notable performances of the day, I thought, was Adam Yates, 11th on the stage, which was, is you know, an outstanding performance. Time trialling is supposed to be the Yates twins' Achilles heel. But that was a really good performance after what has been a disappointing tour for him. Tom Dumoulin, as you say, won the stage, and he appeared for a press conference afterwards where he said he was very, very happy with his tour, very happy with second, paid a very generous tribute, I thought, to Geraint Thomas. I think, you know, in Dumoulin and in Chris Froome, two very magnanimous, gracious losers, both very keen to stress that Geraint Thomas was a very worthy winner of the tour. And one of the most interesting things I thought Dumoulin said was he was asked about the Mur de Bretagne incident where he lost some time and then was docked 20 seconds. He said that had that not happened and he'd been closer to Thomas, then Thomas would have attacked him in the mountains and gained time because he said Thomas was stronger than him in the mountains.
Yeah, he said it wouldn't have changed any results. I would have been second also. Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know whether... Well, we don't know. But it's interesting when a rider comes out and says that because they know exactly how close to the limit they are when the other riders around them are going.
They absolutely know. They absolutely know. You know, on a climb, you absolutely know where you are in relation to the other riders you're climbing with. And, you know, sometimes when we criticise riders for not attacking, it's because they know. They absolutely know. Now, I spoke at the finish to Luke Roberts, the coach at Team Sunweb. They don't call them sports writers, they call them coaches. So he's a coach, Australian. And I asked him about Dumoulin's time trial on his tour and the fact he'd ridden the Giro beforehand and the skin suit. Here's Luke Roberts.
We'd reconned it earlier in the year, had notes of it, and knew what to expect. And then, we very carefully reconned it this morning. Where we have contact the whole time through it, matching our notes, what I see in the park course, what he sees in the park course. Then we have a really good idea how I can guide him through the course then.
And was that a strategy to ride it the way he did when, like you say, or congratulations to, because he was down initially but rode a very good sort of second half. Was that always the plan?
I have no idea how the time slips were the other guys. I don't look at them during the race. I try to concentrate on Tom's race and in the end I was surprised to see that it was only a 1 second difference.
And you'll finish second overall here, Tom, after finishing second at the Giro. Did the Giro cost him anything, do you think, in terms of the efforts he can make here?
I think so. He was very tired, but all the riders here at this tour were tired into the last week after the stress of the first 9 days, the heat in the Alps. Everybody was tired going through the Pyrenees. So I don't know if the Giro took an extra toll on that or whether we'll have the sport scientists back in the office crunching the numbers, looking at the data, and then they can give us a good idea of whether he could have been at a higher level here if he had left the Giro off. But yeah, that answer I can't give for now. So.
Finally, the story about the skin suit. Tell us, my colleague Lionel Byrne is very cynical about this, thinks it's a stunt by the clothing manufacturer. Was it true that the skin suit was misplaced?
Yeah, the world champion stuff was misplaced. It can happen. It's probably shown up by now, but at that moment, we looked for a plan B, and our clothing supplier, Xtiondo, is not so far away in Bilbao. They came to the rescue, actually made a new suit this morning and delivered it. So, actually delivered it 3 hours before the start. So, they had still some time up their sleeve.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport.
Beta Fuel, the new superfuel from Science in Sport, is a 2-to-1 maltodextrin to fructose isotonic drink that delivers 80 grams of carbohydrates per serving without upsetting your stomach. This formulation means your stomach can process more carbohydrates per hour than glucose alone would allow. And this could make all the difference to your ride, whether you're cresting the Alpe d'Huez or just crossing the line at your local Sportive. Available on scienceinsport.com from July the 12th.
Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you to Science in Sport for sponsoring the cycling podcast. We are very grateful to them for their support. And you can get 25% off your Science in Sport stuff with the code SISCP25 at scienceinsport.com. And now we heard before the break there, Lionel, from Luke Roberts, who maintains that this skin suit story is absolutely true. And I thought Damoulin's explanation of that was credible. I was
hogwash,
looking at you.
Absolute hogwash. Luke Roberts even laughed as he was giving his answer. And Damoulin gave
a seamstress came out of retirement to make
this
garment.
Gave the biggest name check to the clothing company, Eche Ondo, which I'm now... I mean, I'm propagating this
You've
whole story.
You've fallen for it, haven't you?
But I mean, okay, maybe... I just think when teams volunteer this stuff or when people volunteer this kind of thing...
Unusual for them to do so on the day, isn't it?
It's a marketing exercise.
You smell a rat.
When somebody finds out...
I don't think it's marketing exercise at all, because if one day we were short of a Pinot de Champ t-shirt, I'm sure we would have, you know, the Pinot de Champ t-shirt within an hour.
Rafa would guess. Oh, in 10 minutes, Francois. 10 minutes. Absolutely. You're right. Yeah, absolutely.
Are you saying this is true?
A very comparable scenario.
Are you saying this whole thing about the missing skin suit is true?
I found maybe Tom Dumoulin was not aware of the oaks, because
oaks, we've just moved from because
actually, I mean, in his press conference he sounded
believable, didn't
yeah,
he?
Absolutely.
He'd been practicing for hours to say that correctly.
I mean, we've been lied to by cyclists before, famously.
How far we've come.
I don't know.
I think noticed there were no tough questions in the press conference about this missing
skin suit.
And how it suddenly turned up afterwards. Luke Roberts said,
say it had turned up. He said it might turn up.
Probably turned up now. Of course it has.
And Luke Roberts back.
This is amazing stuff.
No, I don't know.
Stuff.
Who
amazing.
Knows? We'll but never get to this. We'll never get
maybe
to the bottom
with
of
the
this.
Original
the big
the
story
original
of the day.
Suit, he might have lost to Chris Froome by 1 second. That would have been something.
Maybe.
I mean, could the seamstress do the kind of the double seams? And
I think we have to go and... I mean, you know, we're proper journalists, aren't we? Despite that
despite
question
everything.
We got on the press conference.
I'm sure we should do a kilometre zero on the skin suit.
I'm staying for another week in the Basque Country, so I might go... to the factory and track down the seamstress.
I'm going
to
do a lunch with the skin suit episode. Me and the skin suit. The positive is the skin suit won't eat much, so I can really enjoy myself.
I don't know where this is going.
He won't talk much either, so there you are.
Well, okay, so anyway. Damoulin, we heard from Damoulin, and you know, he no regrets. He's happy with his tour. He's not going to do two Grand Tours again in a season, so you would imagine that the Tour de France will be his main focus next year. I would imagine the tour organisers would be thinking of Damoulin in designing the course. And maybe we'll see a course next year with a bit more time trialling, because I think...
The problem is Christian Prudhomme always said he hated time trials.
Yes, but they like Tom Dumoulin, do they not?
I think so. Everybody likes Tom Dumoulin. Look back at the start in Vendée 3 weeks ago. And you know, and that's when you can accept Tom Dumoulin's real satisfaction with his second place. Who puts Tom Dumoulin even on the tour podium before the start of the tour? Nobody, you know.
And he was an outsider, wasn't he? Really, because he'd ridden the Giro.
Well, I think that's the thing, isn't it? The conventional wisdom these days is that you can't do the two. But he made a really big point about saying that the 5 week gap between the Giro and the Tour really helped him, and he said that if it was shorter than that, it's interesting because as it is now he calls it a 5 week gap, but when it was 1 week less he called it a 3.5 week gap. And that's a really, because there's a whole week's lead into a Grand Tour, isn't there, and there's probably a half a week lead out as well, so it's quite an interesting thing there. But whether or not, well, he's certainly not going to do attempt riding two of them next year. But in terms of, just wanted to ask Francois, did you catch Christian Prudhomme on French TV this evening talking about Geraint Thomas? Because my impression from that was that ASO and Christian Prudhomme, they think Geraint Thomas is projects a good image for the Tour de France.
Yeah, that's my impression. I mean, I think Christian Prudhomme, despite the fact that the Tour de France was, I'm not going to say boring, but I mean, we all discussed between us, between the press and even some of the riders, the tour was not boring, it was predictable. That's what we said. We said it before, first week, sprinters won the sprints. The cobble specialist won the one on the cobbles, and you know, the guy who won the first mountaintop finish won the tour. And today, Tom Dumoulin, the time trial world champion, won the time trial. So in a way, you could have filled, you know, the gaps, the dots at the beginning of the tour without getting far wrong about what was going to happen, except for Geraint Thomas, when everybody was expecting Chris Froome. So it was a predictable Tour de France, but Christian Prudhomme's point of view, probably with all the you know, the problems, and we forgot almost about it. And there was no question to Chris Froome or Geraint Thomas about the salbutamol case that was all the headlines 3 weeks ago. From his point of view, this has been forgiven and forgotten. There were a couple of security issues that there always are. Let's face it, and you know,
there was one sort of question about the salbutamol, and
it was not about salbutamol. It was about doping in general and GV bag. Yeah. Okay, and about you know, Team Sky, you know, harmed reputation in the last couple of months, I should say. But Christian Prudhomme was you know, upbeat because Geraint Thomas, new face. You know, good guy, not Chris Froome again, which might have been a problem in terms of image. And Chris Froome himself, as not a loser, but as a guy, you know, conceding defeats, being dignified in defeats, even improved his own image. And for the French fans, Julien Alaphilippe is the new hero, like Warren Barguil was last year. And Christian Prudhomme was full of praise for Julien Alaphilippe, saying maybe in the future, blah, blah, blah. I think that by and large everybody's happy.
One of the teams of the race has been Lotto NL Jumbo, and we were still today talking about Friday's pretty thrilling stage where so much went on, and there were such interesting scenarios playing out on the road between different riders and different teams, and a team that had a real influence on that stage was Lotto NL Jumbo, and obviously won the stage in the end. And one of the key guys there was Robert Hessink, who, you know, has gone from being a kind of very promising stage race rider for Holland to being a sort of domestic deluxe, an occasional stage grabber. He's signed a new contract with Lotto NL Jumbo as he sort of reaches almost veteran status. And I spoke to him after he'd ridden the time trial, asking him about his role in that stage and the team's performance at the Tour.
The mood was really good. Primoz opened the bottle. I didn't know he could open a bottle with a knife by cutting off a bottle of champagne, the top of the bottle. So he showed us that trick, and it was a awesome stage for us, I must say. Everything worked out as we had hoped. Of course, you make a plan, and you make several plans in the bus, and afterwards we explain it like we all knew that this one it was going to go like this, but of course that's not true. It's always a matter of what the opponents do, and the opponents did what we hoped they would do, and I could make the Sky Boys a bit tired, and then Steven attacked, and Primoz finished it in a crazy descent, and won the stage. And yeah, well, in GC, of course, they're also in good positions, and with possibilities today as well to move up.
I mean, it looked almost as if Sky were letting that group go out a little bit. It was a 3 minutes, Landa, Bardet, and then you brought it down. You took about 2 minutes off that lead. Was it your impression as well that they were letting that lead go out?
Yeah, definitely. That's what they do every day, actually. And, to some spectators, of course, it's a bit of a boring way of racing, but in the end, for them, it worked. And it's their right to do so with the team they have. And, yeah, well, it was our objective to keep the possibility for the stage open, so all opponents would still have something to ride for, because when there's still the possibility to win the queen stage or semi-queen stage, and then that does something to the dynamic of the race. And we wanted an open race where everybody would attack Thomas in this case, or Froome.
Has this been one of the most satisfying team performances from your point of view? You had stage wins with Dylan Groenewegen, and then to have two guys up there and a stage win.
Yeah, definitely. For me personally, it was one of the nicest tours. I mean, I've been fourth, been sixth in the tour personally, myself. So that's of course, as a goal, that's when you reach that goal, it's super satisfying when you cross the line in Paris. But as a team, to be part of a team that wins three stages in a Grand Tour, that's really special, and to have a part in that as well. I mean, it's different. Of course, I started to cycling to win myself. But as years pass by, I think also yeah, your role as a cyclist changes a bit. Of course, I still want to win. But if others win, well, sometimes that's also really satisfying.
Certainly a better tour for you this year than last year.
Oh, definitely. Stage 9, I went, exactly a year ago that I broke my back in stage 9, and or like one vertebrae, and was stuck in a corset for 3 months. And I came from quite far, had to build up, really needed a Giro to get to a higher level. Did a good Giro, by the way, second in the stage, and well, that's close by winning a stage. But this tour really was another step back up and stay on the bike and get better again and get back to the old level.
So that was Robert Hessink. Interesting what he said about Team Sky riding in this, inverted commas, boring way. And you know, he alone had a huge bearing on that stage. He brought the gap down from Absolutely, 3 minutes yeah. to 1 minute, you know, and set it up for Primož Roglič to win the stage.
So there was a man who was not very happy about Hessink doing what he did in the last mountain stage, and it was José Luis Arrieta, the sports director for Movistar. As I said many times in the podcast on this tour, he's a good friend of mine, and I like to go to him and discuss Movistar tactics, which obviously...
That's a short conversation, isn't it, every time?
Well, you know, and it's kind of as, you know, Movistar have their own logic there. I mean, they won the team classification, and that's very important for them.
Which no one notices.
No one notices, but it's €50,000, so it's good, you know, it pays for at least for the hotels, and some of the drinks, you know, yeah. at the end of the day. Yeah. So they did that. They've got three guys, well-placed overall, and José Luis really, you know, stressed and you know, looked at me straight in the face. No, he never does that. But but he told me, well, Movistar, we were the only team to attack. We did attack every day, sending Alejandro to the front, and then we had Landa or and sometimes Mark Soler or we had Landa or Nairo attacking. We won a stage. We won the team classification. And about that day, in the last mountain stage in the Pyrenees, he said, why did Lotto Jumbo take over from Team Sky? I mean, they should have let Team Sky do the job. Well, of you can understand why Arrieta should say that, because at the time when Lotto Jumbo started to seize the reins of the peloton, Mikel Landa was actually second overall. Mm. So we can understand his point of view. But he maintains that they attacked, they tried their best, they did what they could, and he even told me, which is kind of a scoop, that maybe in the next Vuelta, they would have the same three leaders.
Well done, Movistar, for paying their hotel bills.
Yeah,
I mean, they've broken even. I mean, they actually get their hotel bills paid for them up to, I think, 24 or 25 people, and then any additional staff they have to pay for. But it's funny, isn't it? Because you know, team classification is an achievement, and we're lauding Dan Martin for winning most combative rider, which is a sort of consolation prize. But I think it's all about your expectations coming into the race, and we really expected Movistar to be the team to mount a serious challenge to Team Sky here, and they certainly haven't done that. And that's where the disappointment, the sense of deflation comes from a little bit. Mm. Should we wrap things up?
Yeah, but just before we do, well, we were all in the press conference, the winners' press conference, as they call it, even though it's not... Yeah, it's not technically a done deal, but really tomorrow. I mean, if Geraint Thomas fell off, the whole peloton would slow down until 3 kilometres to go.
Who knows?
And then
Who knows?
I mean, we know. We do know. But Richard, you posted a couple of pictures on the Cycling Podcast Twitter feed, which is a divided opinion. Unusual
it's
that a
divided
tweet
opinion. It's got a terrible reaction.
Well,
okay,
yeah.
So let me describe the scene. We were at the press conference. Traditionally, on the Saturday night, the winner... elect, you know, the guy who's going to win the tour the next day does a press conference, and we get the stage winner and the guy in the yellow jersey. Unusually tonight, we also got Chris Froome, who you know, will finish on the podium in Paris and was second on the stage. And I'll be interested to ask Team Sky about this, but I wonder if he volunteered himself, and I wouldn't actually be surprised if he did, because I think he takes his status and his position quite seriously as the defending champion, four-time winner. And I wouldn't be surprised if he said he wanted to speak, because we haven't heard a lot from Chris Froome. He hasn't won a stage and he hasn't been in the yellow jersey. So he came and he gave a press conference, but he had to wait while Geraint Thomas was giving his press conference. So Geraint Thomas, in the yellow jersey, in the spotlight, was giving his press conference. And off to the side, you know, backstage, sat Chris Froome, you know, looking at his phone and checking his messages and so on. And I just thought it was quite a poignant scene. The defending champion, the four-time winner, having to play the supporting role in that scenario, in that context too, with Geraint Thomas in the bright lights, the photos going on. So I took a picture of Froome waiting, and I took a picture of Geraint Thomas, and I posted a picture of the two of them sort of side by side. And it's just, yeah, it's got a terrible reaction from a lot of people.
This picture tells a very simple story. Geraint Thomas won the Tour. Chris Froome was third. That's all it says.
Yeah, I mean, the facts are much, much harsher than a photographic representation of the facts. I mean, credit to Chris Froome for coming in and doing that press conference anyway.
He was in confiding mood. I mean, I found him very, you know, interesting, different.
Froome did not need to do that press conference.
It's the first press conference he's done where there's not been a question about salbutamol or whatever.
But I thought it reflected well on him, and I think it's something he wanted to do, and he wanted to give Geraint Thomas his seal of approval and to pay tribute to the performance that he's put in over the last 3 weeks. So, you know, that was the thinking behind the tweet, but I apologise to anybody who was offended. I don't really.
No.
I do, obviously.
I mean, anyone offended by that really needs to listen to our next friend special, in which let's do a friend special in which
the cyclingpodcast.com.
The cycling podcast after dark, maybe. I mean, some of the stuff Francois has been saying from his nest in the back of the car really can't be broadcast.
Unbroadcastable. Anyway, let's leave it there, chaps. We'll be back tomorrow with a final podcast from the Tour de France, and then next week, our final press conference, also from the Tour de France, with some of your questions. Thank you very much, Francois.
Well, the French flavor of the day, obviously, Piment d'Espelette, the spicy and sweet and very tasty, you know, chili from Espelette. That was the finish down today. On that spicy note, I say hi, guys, because I'm not going to do any French flavor about Paris, because it would take probably 3 or 4 podcasts to tell you all about the charms of the city of
Terrible
light.
Terrible place, Paris, isn't it?
It is awful. Yeah,
not really good bookshop.
Nothing to say about
a really good bookshop, though, hasn't it?
Of course.
Where is that? What's the address of the bookshop?
It's called Librairie Le Cahier, and where is it? Rue du Théâtre, in the 50th arrondissement. It's a great place. If you want to buy books, I mean... Not bookshop. Oh, well.
Are you selling your bookshop, Francois? Yeah. Are you selling
No, I'm not
bookshop?
Selling it. But if you want to buy books, some in English, actually, and books about cycling, why not go to Librairie Le Cahier?
Is your restaurant in Paris as well?
Marseille?
I
have a restaurant in Marseille.
Restaurant in Marseille, of course.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We'll plug that tomorrow night. Yeah. That's all for now. Thank you, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Francois.
You have been listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2018 Tour de France. Thanks to our sponsors, Rafa and Science in Sport. The music is by Santoré. This episode was produced by Alex Aidy.